Good morning, honorable, good afternoon, honorable judges of the Court of Appeals. My name is Bob Choate, attorney registration 40588. I represent Weld County in the matter, and specifically the individually named commissioners on the Board of County Commissioners. Before you are two related issues. First, primarily, whether the trial court erred in granting the preliminary injunction in this case, and more specifically, whether the trial court erred as a matter of law in determining that it had the authority to determine whether good cause in fact existed for the removal of the library district trustees. The trustees are the plaintiffs in this case, and the elected officials are the defendants. I refer to them as elected officials because there are numerous elected officials from numerous jurisdictions. It's a dispute about between the defendants and the plaintiff trustees for their removal. Five of the seven establishing entities that created the library district voted to remove the trustees last spring. The sixth was going to, but this action halted that. There is a requirement in the Colorado Library Law, Colorado Revised Statute 2490-108, subsection 5, that prior to removal, there must be a showing of good cause prior to removal of a trustee. And the
Council, could I just ask you a question? Excuse my interrupting. You refer earlier to good cause in fact. What do you mean by good cause in fact?
It really is the crux of the argument is what level of review should the trial court have used? And what the trial court did was actually look to see if there were facts to support the reasons stated for good cause for removal in the elected officials' resolutions. My argument is that the trial court should not have done that. This is not a quasi-judicial determination. This is an administrative act by these various elected boards. And the trial court really should have just reviewed it for compliance with law, for compliance with the statute, which requires a showing of good cause.
Should they then, are you saying the court cannot determine whether the grounds that were cited complied with the statute, or are you saying we can review for that purpose?
Absolutely.
The district court can review.
Absolutely. The district court can review for compliance with the statute, but this isn't a quasi-judicial determination where the trial court is there to see if there's competent evidence to support the decision. It's an administrative act. And that's where the difference between the plaintiff trustees and the defendant elected officials lie in their argument.
So under that interpretation, I take it, I'm going to talk about a hypothetical, obviously, but if the board determined that the six, I forget the exact number now, the board members of the Board of Trustees had embezzled $1 million from the district, and there was absolutely no evidence to support that. That is not something that the court could consider. Is that what you're saying?
I would argue that if there is a finding made by the elected officials that embezzlement occurred, then the trial court would have no authority to look to see if it was accurate or not.
So the people would have absolutely no remedy under those circumstances?
Well, the remedy is simply a determination of whether there's compliance with the statute. And absolutely, it comes down to what rights do they have in their positions. And there's a couple of ways to determine whether something is quasi-judicial. And the crux of this is that these are public officials. Public officials, as distinguished from public employees, do not necessarily have property rights in their positions. And because notice and hearing are terms that are used in both quasi-judicial determinations and in procedural due process analysis, it's really a matter of protecting someone's procedural due process rights. And here, they have no such rights because they're not public employees, and there's no other source that I have found that provides them with property rights to their individual property rights to their positions as trustees on the Board of Trustees. And so it really comes down to what are the we trying to protect by granting them a quasi-judicial hearing. And a public official is someone who is delegated some sort of sovereign authority, And that's exactly what's occurring here pursuant to the Colorado Library Law and the 1985 Intergovernmental Agreement that established the Library District. These trustees are delegated authority to run the Library District, which is a subdivision of the state. They fall squarely within the definition of public official. But there's no property rights that they have. There's no source such as the Colorado Constitution or contract that would give them property rights that need to be protected.
Well, there's a statute that says they can only be removed for good cause, correct?
Correct.
And if there is not good cause for that removal, you're saying they're without a remedy, as are the people in the Library District.
I would argue that they have no judicial remedy. And that's consistent with case law. Going back to a case cited by the trustees in their answer brief, Trimble v. State, it's an 1893 Colorado Supreme Court case in which the governor summarily removed the Denver Police Commissioner. The Supreme Court, even at that early time, referred to it as quasi-judicial and stated discussed it as quasi-judicial, did not say that it was quasi-judicial. A requirement to remove in that circumstance was that the governor state the cause in writing for the removal. There was a secondary limitation that it not be for political purposes. But even with those two requirements, those findings or showings, it wasn't a quasi-judicial determination. Similarly, in a very recent case, the Colorado Water Conservancy Board versus Colorado Farmers Development Company, April 6th of this year, the Colorado Supreme Court stated that the requirement of the Conservancy Board to make three findings, did not convert their otherwise quasi-legislative determination into a quasi-judicial one. Those, of course, were facts very different, because this is not a quasi-legislative action, it's an administrative action. However, it just shows that the requirement to make a finding does not convert it automatically into a quasi-judicial determination.
Did the commissioners in this case make a determination of good cause?
Yes.
And how did they do that?
It was listed in the resolution which removed the trustees, and each of the other elected official boards, the other elected boards, made identical findings.
But how did they determine good cause?
They determined good cause, basically that goes into the facts of the case, which are not in dispute at this early level of the litigation, but they were unhappy with the actions of the library board, and they made findings with particularity as to what those should be.
They looked at the actions, then you're saying, of the trustees, and they made findings.
Yes.
That sounds like a quasi-judicial act.
It certainly does, but again, it doesn't have to be, and it doesn't make sense for it to be quasi-judicial here. One, even though you're applying specific facts to pre-existing legal standards, as I've just stated, that there are times when making a finding doesn't mean that it's quasi-judicial, including going back 120 years, a finding of cause for removal from a position. There's also this idea that quasi-judicial actions deserve a hearing, and there's no practical way to have a hearing in this circumstance, because you have seven different elected boards that each get to vote on whether removal is appropriate. I'm looking at the intent of the General Assembly in passing this statute in, I believe it was 79 or 80, but what was their intent? Did they intend it to be quasi-judicial? It would be very difficult to have seven different hearings or one omnibus hearing for the in order for the person, the individual affected, to have their rights heard, have their say. And so
I'm not sure why that's correct. Why couldn't one of the governing bodies, say the Weld County Board of County Commissioners, have conducted a hearing and then provided that record to all the other entities, and they could have each made their decision based on that record?
I suppose that is certainly possible, Your Honor. There's just no indication that that was the intent in the statute. And
there's
it wasn't
no indication that it wasn't their intent. You're just, we're speculating here. I think you're speculating whether or not they said, well, because you got a bunch of entities here, it's difficult to have a hearing. When in fact, I don't think it is. They could have jointly appointed a special master to conduct a hearing who could have presented the record. I think when we start talking about that, aren't we getting into a lot of speculation about what the legislature may have intended?
Well, it really comes down to the Cherry Hills case cited in the trustee's answer brief. And it's the matter of the fact that a hearing and notice have not been expressly required, although they can be implied in the statute. And so the argument is not so much that it's speculative, but simply that this court may imply that a hearing and notice and a hearing are required by the statute. So my argument is simply that in these circumstances, it's impractical to imply it. The implication should be based on what the intent of the General Assembly was in passing the statute. And certainly it's possible not only to have a special master or to have a designated hearing with a record made available or an omnibus hearing with everybody or multiple different hearings, but the elected officials in Weld County are arguing that that's not the most practical reading of the statute. And given that there's no procedural due process rights that need to be protected, it doesn't make sense to go out of our way to imply that a hearing is necessary.
I take it we could conclude under your a view of the statute, or the district court could conclude that the reasons cited for the removal did not constitute good cause without getting into the factual basis for them. Is that correct?
If the court were to simply review the findings of good cause, certainly the court could say that's not good cause. As an outlandish example, if the resolution is purported to remove everyone because they are white or because they are some other protected class, that would be in violation of law. Without looking to see whether they're actually white or part of some other protected class, they would.
Well, then you're asking to get into fact finding, aren't you?
I'm asking not to get into fact finding.
But under the hypothetical you just mentioned, you'd be getting into fact finding about whether or not everybody was white, or where everybody, maybe they removed them because everybody had a Raiders, was seen wearing an Oakland Raiders t-shirt. You would have fact-finding in order to determine whether that was true, wouldn't you?
I argue that there should be no fact-finding and that the court should look and say, is the removal because they're wearing Raiders hats, is that good cause?
Or if you said they're all sex offenders, that's just it. We're done, right?
It would be up for the trial court to make that determination. I would like to say that what I'm asking the court to do is to remand it back to the trial court for reconsideration of the evidence. There is basically the vast majority of the evidence was admitted under the idea that whether there was good cause supporting this determination of good cause, whether there were facts in support, and because that was well outside my argument that the trial court should have considered, it abused its discretion, and it specifically goes to whether there was a probability of success on the merits. And with your permission, I request to hold the rest of my argument for rebuttal.
You may.
Thank you.
Two minutes and 3 seconds.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Timothy Odle, number 35771, representing the High Plains Library District and its Board of Trustees. I refer to them as the district. We're here today because the defendants below, a rogue group of officials of towns, a school district, and county commissioners, and I'll refer to them as towns, took secret action to remove the entire Board of Trustees and replace the trustees with themselves. The towns did not follow
code. When you say they're a rogue group, it sounds like it's five of the six establishing entities. They're legislative groups. What does it mean to be a rogue group?
It's five of eight, Your Honor. The city of Greeley is the largest constituent member of the district, and the town of Evans is the second largest constituent member, and these folks were excluded from the process entirely. That's what I mean by a rogue. It was actions taken without notice, without sunshine, as would be appropriate to take action that the minority wished to take. As the trial court found, these, as I referred to, rogue group, constitute 14% of the patrons of the district, attempted to take over the entire district, excluding the other 86%. The towns, in doing so, did not follow Colorado library law. They disregarded the district's properly enacted bylaws, and they threw out the accepted course of conduct that had been followed in the past. The towns took removal and replacement action without notice to the district. And the district is an independent subdivision of the state of Colorado by Colorado Library Law, once created. And the road group did not provide any notice to the trustees themselves who were being kicked out of office or purported to be kicked out of office. This action flouted fairness, due process, and flouted the law. And as I stated before, a small minority attempted to take over the entire board.
Whose due process rights are you referring to?
Well, first of all, the district itself, second, the trustees themselves.
Does the district have rights of due process under the Colorado or U.S. Constitution?
Well, I would refer specifically to the trustees themselves who act as the board, but the Colorado Library Law vests the board itself with significant duties and obligations to manage the district. The trustees act to approve budgets, to make all policy decisions within the district, and to represent the patrons of the library district who are the taxpayers. So that's what I mean by due process rights.
Council, Mr. Choate argues that the individual trustees do not have any vested property rights of any sort. Do you agree with that?
No, Your Honor. The Colorado Constitution, Article 12, specifically states that as elected officials, the trustees remain in their office until they're properly removed. The statute that we're dealing with provides the process that must be followed. Must be a specific showing of good cause, which the word showing is very important. A showing of good cause as defined in the board's bylaws and from other sources. In this case, the evidence that before the trial court was that, as the court has already inquired, did not factually support its statement of good cause. There was no showing of good cause because there was no hearing held. There was no notice provided to the affected individuals, and there was no hearing held to determine whether any of the alleged statements of good cause were in fact true.
Does the record reflect whether there was any discussion at these various governmental bodies, the five bodies, before the resolution was adopted?
There was some evidence in the record, yes, of letters exchanged and things like that following board meetings that were held prior to the actions that were taken to remove and replace the officials.
But you're saying that the record does not reflect that any notice was given to anyone that this was going to come up at a particular meeting?
That's correct, Your Honor. If any one of the establishing bodies, the towns, had provided notice to an individual trustee saying we're going to hold a hearing on whether you should continue in your position, please come and you can present evidence if you care to, you can present witnesses in your favor, you can present comment on our course of action. We're going to have a meeting, we're going to decide whether this is the action we're going to take. That notice was not provided. The injunction, however, is the reason why we're here today. And the injunction was proper to preserve the status quo so the trial court could sort out this mess and whether it was proper for the actions to have been taken. So specifically, I wanted to focus the court on three reasons that it should affirm the injunction. First, the scope of this appeal is whether the injunction was proper. Now, that's an abuse of discretion review. The trial court made detailed findings supporting the injunction, and this is not a determination on the merits. The sole issue raised by the appellants, the county, excuse me, is that the good cause statement is not reviewable. With respect, that doesn't have anything to do with whether the injunction was proper, which is the scope of this appeal. Which leads me to the second point I wanted the court to focus on is...
Well, doesn't that go to probability, likelihood of success, or probability of success? If this is a non-reviewable action that they took, there's no basis for even the court even to get involved, is there?
The court's point is exactly right, Your Honor. It is but one of several factors the court considered in finding the likelihood of success on the merits. The declaratory judgment action below that the district asserted, filed, sought review of several different issues, one of which was removal proper, second was replacement proper, and third was the ratification proper. The trial court made findings that the second two elements of what I just stated, the replacement and ratification, was also did not follow the bylaws, did not follow the Colorado Library Law. So irrespective of whether this court finds that the sole issue that the county has raised regarding good cause determination, irrespective of the court's determination of that issue, there remain two other issues at least that the trial court found supported the likelihood of success on the merits and that the trial court used to support its entry of an injunction. So then even if the county's incorrect claim that good cause is not reviewable, even if that were true, this court could not reverse the injunction because the court did not abuse its discretion regarding the other two issues that it found supported the likelihood of success on the merits factor. And finally, the third point I wanted the court to realize is that the court is wrong, the county is wrong that its allegation of good cause is not reviewable. It's a quasi-judicial action because, as the county conceded here today, the Cherry Hills case states that when dealing with individual rights as applied to a particular standard defined by law, that constitutes a quasi-judicial action which is reviewable by the court. So first, with respect to the scope of this appeal, the injunction was proper because, as the court just noted, factors that support entry of an injunction were each met by facts in the record here, and that review is an abuse of discretion review. First, with respect to the Rathke factors, the trial court made findings regarding likelihood of success on the merits. As I just stated, the court found that the county and the towns in total did not follow the bylaws for nomination. The towns did not follow the nomination committee process in the bylaws for replacing a trustee. And the county and the towns did not follow the ratification process as set forth in the Colorado Library Law and in the bylaws. The evidence that before the trial court also indicated that there was a course of conduct, at least, if not an accepted modification of Colorado Library Law that constituted the delegation of that process to the board, in which process was followed to nominate and ratify replacement trustees. The trial court found specifically on the April 29th transcript at 138 to 143 that these two things were simply not followed. And the trial court based its likelihood of success on the merits finding on that, on those two flaws. Now the third one is, of course, the good cause element. And the trial court also relied upon good cause, but it is one of three elements that the trial court found supported the likelihood of success on the merits. Therefore, the basis asserted is satisfactory to allow this court to find the trial court did not abuse its discretion in finding a likelihood of success on the merits. Other factors the court considered regarding the good cause element were that the county attorney's own analysis indicated that individual action was necessary to find that good cause for removal existed. And the trial court received evidence from what every other library district does in Colorado with respect to its bylaws or their bylaws and what a finding of good cause constitutes.
Is that in the record what every other district does?
Yes, Your Honor. The Colorado State Library maintains a database, an internet site, which provides the bylaws for each of the other districts in Colorado. And the trial court received evidence of in a summary form of what the good cause determination requires for each of those districts.
But it didn't take evidence about how those have been implemented, did it?
Well, the language itself is what the trial court took okay. evidence of, and that's in the record at 192, Your Honor. So all these factors taken together find that there are sufficient facts in the record to support the likelihood of success on the merits, the first Rathke factor. Second, with respect to irreparable harm, the trial court found that...
Counsel, excuse me for interrupting again.
Yes, Your Honor.
I didn't read the brief of the briefs of the appellants as attacking any of the attacking the trial court's ruling on any of the Rathke factors other than the first one. Is that your understanding?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's exactly my point.
Okay.
The scope of this appeal deals with a single issue, which is a single subset of likelihood of success on the merits. The court could completely find for the county, which it should not, for the reasons articulated in the brief, and that I'll get to. But even if it did, it could not reverse the injunction as the county requests. Second point I wanted the court to focus on, I'll skip over the remaining Rathke factors, is that the injunction requires a showing of good cause. And the district sought a declaratory judgment on removal, the required process for removal, the process for replacement, whether the replacement is proper, and what the bylaws require. And that's in the record, as the court found in the record at 138. As I stated, that these issues will also support likelihood of success on the merits and also support the injunction. These factors alone, and the fact that the bylaws were not followed, alone supports entry of the injunction. And finally, the third issue I wanted to talk about today is the sole issue that the county raises regarding reviewability. Even as to the removal, the county is wrong because that determination is reviewable. As I stated a moment ago, the statute specifically requires a showing of good cause, as defined in, but not limited to, the bylaws. This indicates that the district and the library board itself is intended to define what good cause means. Now, as the record showed, this never occurred in that 30 years that the district has been in place. This sort of thing had never occurred before. So good cause, the definition of good cause never made it into the bylaws until after this dispute arose. However, other library districts have defined good cause, and it relates to individual actions such as the court indicated, embezzling $1 million. If a particular trustee does something wrongful and establishing body seek to remove that individual, findings could be made that that was a wrongful thing. Individual action applied to that trustee, and that may well constitute good cause. That's what other library districts define it as. And what other contexts, not just library law, define good cause as. It's something that relates to an individual and that individual's conduct. Now, the Cherry Hills case that opposing counsel just conceded is an authoritative case. It states that an action is quasi-judicial if it deals with identifiable people, rights, duties, or obligations. And the Cherry Hills case also states that a hearing in that context means adequate notice and an opportunity to be heard at a meaningful time and in a meaningful place. As I stated at the very beginning, that did not occur here. There was no notice provided to any trustee that the establishing bodies or the town sought to remove him or her from office. And there were no findings as to anything that an individual trustee did. As the record shows, one trustee had been on the board for a very short time, a few months. Certainly did not do anything during his tenure or her tenure to constitute good cause that should support being kicked out of office. In addition, the Van Sickle case states that notice and opportunity to be heard by an impartial tribunal is what's intended by adequate notice and adequate opportunity to be heard.
Is it necessary that there be a separate hearing before each of the bodies?
One of the issues in this case is, what is the percentage of votes required to remove someone from office? The reading that the district takes is that each establishing body, each town, has to take a vote to determine whether they seek to take the action. And then the majority, a majority vote of each establishing body has to be taken. So in that case, yes, the district's position is that a separate hearing would need to be held by each establishing body.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Choate?
Just to cover a few points here, it doesn't matter whether there are seven or eight establishing entities. Five of the establishing entities voted to remove by resolution. That is a majority under the statute. As the trustee, council for the trustees have just pointed out, they take the view that it requires a unanimous approval for the removal of the trustees, requiring a majority vote of each legislative body. The word each is not in there, and it makes more sense to read it as a majority vote of all legislative bodies, and the word all is in there. I just want to point out,
If it's seven, you mean four of seven, or if it's eight, five of eight?
Correct.
Okay.
And there were five, so it doesn't matter whether there's seven or eight in there. The statute does not limit the determination of good cause to what's in the district's bylaws, although it allows them to define it. Your example of an embezzlement would certainly be an example of not going to be in the bylaws, but would be worthy of removal. These are separate issues, as my esteemed opposing counsel has stated, regarding the removal and the replacement. And the removal actions are what was primarily addressed by the court, finding that although she found that the replacement actions were deficient, she said there's really no need to consider that because the removal actions were deficient based on the evidence. So it's really different actions, and the removal actions are what are at stake here. I guess what I would just ask is that if this is, if the court determines that this was quasi-judicial in nature, and that the court had the authority, the trial court, pardon me, had the authority to consider the evidence supporting the determinations of good cause, it's really a matter of what does this look like? Typically, it's a CRCP 106 action, and that's not what this was brought under, and I would ask the court to remand it down to the trial court for appropriate proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your excellent arguments. The case is submitted, and a decision will be forthcoming in due course. We are now completed with our docket for this afternoon, and the bailiff may call a recess.
All rise.